because I think so many kids these days, you know, at school, they all want to be the prettiest, they all want to be the cleverest, they all want to be the fastest runner, and nobody wants to be themselves. Yet, if you try to be somebody else, it makes you boring. You can never be somebody else and be true. So be yourself. And I think that's a thing. And I think being yourself makes you live an absolutely gratifying life.
Death has always been a certainty.
That's what I like about Anjali. It has to be a certainty.
Endless topics that we can talk about.
Dying to meet you.
Welcome to my podcast. You were saying that when you were in the desert, what helped you to bring memories back was the special bee. What was that? Killing bees?
No, we had which was quite fun in the desert because in the desert there are literally no sounds. Mm. I mean, it is quiet that your ears ring.
Oh,
as
really?
You know, it's so silent that your ears just ring. But in the summer months, actually in the desert, it was quite fun. Depending on our location, we were in places where there was like a mound of grass and then just desert sand and then a mound of grass. Around the summer months, it would be actually quite a similar situation to South Africa, and it would remind me of Christmas in South Africa, which would be a nice festive, but all the family members come together and we'd sit around opening presents, and we got a thing called the Christmas beetle, which is a rose beetle.
Okay.
And it basically sounds like this, but a small version of this. It's just zzz, and a small brown beetle, and these things would be making their sounds in the grass.
Oh my God.
And I'd sit there, and if I closed my eyes, it would be a hot summer's evening, and I'd be sitting outside listening to this beetle, and I could almost be back home with my family sitting around a swimming pool, and it gave me a lot of comfort actually.
When you hear those sounds, right? Yeah, I think those sounds, you know, the five senses usually give you a lot of memory, brings back so much memory. Mm-hmm. So what would you define as the darkest moment for you when you were held hostage?
I suppose, you know, when you feel almost betrayed by your own people, you know, when you, so that moment was when I believe, so the French arrived in Mali and they arrived to come and liberate Mali from Al-Qaeda. And I thought that the French were on my team and that they were there to come and save me and to come and help me. And then I heard with time that the French actually were not there to save me. The French were actually stopping my negotiation, and I'd built up so much sort of, you know, belief and hope, such gut-wrenching hope that the French were my people and they were there to get me out of this indefinite prison sentence.
Mm.
You know, that just seemed so dire. Nobody was ever going to be on my team. I thought the French have arrived and they were on my team, and then I heard that the French were not there to save me. And that was a particularly dark moment on this roller coaster of ups and downs in the desert.
Oh,
and it was early days. It was maybe 2 years in. That
was darkest moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do you hate the French now? Because my partner is French, so.
So the French have great ski resorts. They make fantastic wines, but my word, politically, I'm not sure.
So, because, you know, I think there was something that was so powerful when you share about conquer your fear. And I think that's how you survived that 6 years. You know, I think you talk about mental wellness, even physically. How did you conquer your fear? And what was the moment for you where you say, you know, F it, I'm just going to make sure I conquer my fear and then move. And that's the only way to live, right?
My biggest fear in the desert was the fact that I had a British passport stapled to me. For me to conquer that fear was an ongoing effort where I had to try and prove to Al-Qaeda that I was a South African. And it was up and down and up and down. And there were many successes and many failures. But I could see that when Al-Qaeda started to refer to me as being South African, that for me was basically overcoming one of my biggest fears there in the Sahara. And I realized there with people, if you can use yourself, if you can be good to people, you know, and treat people like they are human, that probably, and then you can win people over. That is the best way to change the world and to change your own situation.
So I read in your book that you actually tried to get rid of your British passport when you are in transport. Was that even successful? You know,
no.
How did you try? I think for the audience, you know, yeah. So you hold two passports, right?
Yes.
So
right.
Yes, I remember that where you were like, oh my God, I need to get rid of my British passport. So, and it wasn't successful, right?
No, it wasn't successful. It was a real problem. In fact, I met with, so I planned to eat it. I planned to eat it. It was a mess. I literally had a window period of about an hour, I think, to try and get rid of this passport. And I thought, well, I can start eating it and I can eat all the pages because they paper pages. But there was one page that was had a thick plastic and it was a really stiff page. And I thought, there's no way that I could ever actually eat this page. And that page had my photo on it.
Oh,
so I could eat every other page, but what would remain would be a plastic page with my photo, which says Britannia. So when I ended up meeting with MI5 and MI6 after my release, I said to them, just, you know, some information, some guidance for MI5, MI6. When you guys make passports for people going to these areas, make them out of rice paper that you can eat your passport.
I think that's a very good advice, you know. So I remember this part about your experience. So because you also talk a lot about... I think one other thing was being true to yourself. I think this experience, you know, someone asked you just now, given a chance, will you have gone through it again? And I thought that message was really beautiful. Could you elaborate? Like, if given a chance, will you relive these moments again?
Would I relive the kidnapping?
Mm-hmm.
If I was to say yes, I would relive the kidnapping. I think it would be very selfish for what my family went through. But... and it was 6 years of hardship, so it was not easy, and my body took an incredible knocking, beating. So I would not want to relive it, but I would not want to give away my learnings from it. What I have learned from my time in captivity have been absolutely priceless. You know, in a way, people say to you, if you get hit by a bus today, you know, are you in a good place to die, to end it? And, you know, and I think back then I would have said, no, if I get hit by, back before my kidnapping, if I said I get hit by a bus today, you know, I'm not in a good place. You know, I feel like I'm wasting my life. I'm not living a life that is true to me. And I got given a second chance, I would say. I got grazed by the proverbial bus, and it took me out of society for 6 years where I could rethink what was important in life and who I was and what it is to be true to yourself and what is important in life. Is it the money? Is it the relationships? Is it the friendships? Is it yourself? I mean, and I came up with the realization that, you know, it is about being complete in yourself and inviting people into your space and getting involved in other people's spaces, because that is where you can change the world. To live insular is not a way of life. To live somebody else's life is not a way of life. It's important that we all live our own lives. And I think that's a big message for young children today, especially for young children. Because I think so many kids these days, you know, at school, they all want to be the prettiest. They all want to be the cleverest. They all want to be the fastest runner. And nobody wants to be themselves. Yet, if you try to be somebody else, it makes you boring. You can never be somebody else and be true. So be yourself. And I think that's a thing. And I think being yourself makes you live an absolutely gratifying life.
In fact, I think when you share that, there was so much element, you know, that we can learn. And you talk about mental wellness. I think one of the examples you share was even kids nowadays, they were thinking about like challenging or daring each other to commit suicide. Yeah. I mean, mental wellness has been a big part, you know, it's a big part in my chapter as well. There was something that I thought it was very interesting, even, you know, just you were sharing about traveling light. I think nowadays you say you want to travel light. Maybe you can elaborate on that purpose of life now.
I think just this whole natural thing of you know, being capitalistic means we, the more we earn, the more we buy, we feel like we need to spend all the money that we have. Whereas I think you are probably in your happiest place when you're traveling light, when you actually put relationships before your assets. So the less you have, keep it simple, you know, focus more on the relationship with people around you than actually being distracted by having
all these things, the
world's biggest TV, you know, and because that becomes very insular. So it's more important to actually put relationships first.
I totally agree, because, you know, there's a research that says that 90% of the people live their life, but they leave life and they die with regrets. And it wasn't regrets about material possession that they didn't get or didn't own. It's always about things they didn't say, right, to their loved ones and their relationship. How has this experience of 6 years changed your relationship with your loved ones?
I think it requires being brave as well. Because, I mean, you know, we all know what we're feeling, but so often we are quite scared to sort of make ourselves vulnerable and put ourselves out there. You know, when I came out of the desert, every time I went on a business trip, I would give myself a father a hug goodbye, you know, and obviously my wife. But you see, within our family, I mean, my wife and I, obviously that's normal. But within my family, when my mom was around, she would always say, "Come on, give your son a hug," you know, and so it's not in my dad's genetics to just give a hug. So I would force myself to give him a hug, and I just realized that, you know, break down those barriers and actually sort of be true. So. But it's difficult. It requires being vulnerable. And and I'm human, so there are times I'll say goodbye and I'll go off and do my thing. But I would, but my heart breaks, and I actually feel I should have give my dad a hug.
Right. It's the same for me, because I used to think it was so difficult to hug my mom, but nowadays every time I see her, I will hug her, just fearing that I never know when is my last. Right. So, or maybe touch wood, you know, maybe my life is quite valuable to be kidnapped by somebody. I don't know. talking about kidnapping, I was watching this Vatican girl. She got kidnapped by the Vatican, you know. Then that was also something that kind of relate to you, right? Imagine 30 over years not finding your loved ones. I think that's really scary, and the stress that is on the family members. Yeah, I can't imagine that. But the fact that, you know, 6 years, and you actually managed to go through and pull through that 6 years, what would you deem as the happiest moment for you in the desert? Where do you see, you know, I think it was difficult, but you mentioned just now that you always find a light or something during your experience.
I found my happiest moments were the small moments, actually, and because the beauty of life is in the detail, I think. So, you know, you can be overwhelmed by the macro environment, by the full picture, but it's when you actually slow down and look at the small things. And for me, I mean, some of my happiest moments was there was one particular day in my grass hut, which I built myself. There was a small praying mantis, eggs. The praying mantis was long gone, but there were eggs in the grass. And I sat there for about 45 minutes watching these small praying mantises climb out of their eggs. And there were these little white things, and they were so delicate and gentle, and they were like wet, and they would stand on the grass. And about 10 minutes later, they could start walking around, and they started to get stronger. And I just found it was incredible. I mean, it was just creation. It was amazing. Another day, I was watching small crickets, like locusts, climbing out of the sand, also being born, coming out of the sand and jumping around. And those were the things that made me realize that so often we put such pressures on ourselves, but actually life takes care of itself, you know, and things are born and things eat and then things die at some stage. And that's what life is. So why do we put, you know, so even when life is so bad, there is so much normality, which is not what we do, because we force ourselves into weird situations. But there's so much normal stuff out there that we can focus on to really bring us back to what is the meaning of life.
Yeah, I think being authentic and also being grounded, it seems like, you know, 6 years there's also a lot of things that you learn. You talk about death, like you talk about farewell, you know, in my podcast, I have to ask everybody the same question, that we all have different journeys, but our destinations is the same. And I think during your six years, there were moments where you thought, oh my God, this is it. You know, in the next 5 seconds that you were handed, like you were saying, like moments, time was like a block. Yeah. So have you ever contemplated, you know, how would your farewell be like other than tequila shots?
How would my parting?
Yeah.
Geez, well, back in the old days, I probably would have been dropped in a hole, and that would have been the end of it. I mean, back in the desert. But
how would your farewell, you know, or funeral be like for you?
Based on my friends, there would be a lot of tequila, and there would be bloody trumpets and guitars and drums, and probably a lot of naked people jumping in a swimming pool. It would be a wild party.
Skinny dipping and all that.
Yeah,
I think that's how we want to live life, right? I mean, I always say, like, live life with no regrets and leave life with no regrets, right?
I mean, I think, look, death is part of the process.
Yeah.
We are born, we live, we die. So and I'm not quite sure anybody actually ever leaves entirely. I mean, you'll always feel the presence, or, you know, and there's the beauty of in the memories. Yeah. So I think it's just the next stage of life. So people should live it and celebrate it and celebrate the passing.
Exactly. There you go. That's why it's called a life celebrant for my company, TLC. So anyway, I just want to end off this with all the listeners. What is some key message that you have for our listeners, and maybe about living life, or can be anything that you would like to part them with?
I think life is too short, and we all get caught up in the difficulties of life. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to focus on living every single day, because difficulties are not going to stop.
Mm.
So find the value in every day, and embrace every day, and embrace the people every single day. And if someone's having a bad day, give them a hand, because life is an amazing journey. Hey, there is so much to enjoy. It's so amazing, wonderful.
Oh, wow. Here, coming from, hang on, I need to pull this out so that they can see my face. So coming from Sentosa, Fort Siloso, we have Stephen Mangal with us. I hope to get you back here in Singapore, and we can continue our tequila shots.
Happy days.
Yes, and then we have brought him to see a lot of things in Singapore, and I think it's a privilege for us and honor for us to even hear your story. And thank you for joining us. And as promised, I have my book, Dying to Meet You, that I said I would definitely give you a copy.
Awesome.
And I'm going to say the same thing as what Johan said. I read your book, so you have to read my book too.
Thanks, man. This will be fantastic.
Yes. All right. So thank you so much. Any other last words?
Your country is hot and sweaty.
Evidently. I know you. All right. And this is another session of the podcast, Dying to Meet You. And we listened and we share all these beautiful stories from different people from all walks of life. And I'm dying to meet you for our next session. Thank you. See you then.
Death has always been a certainty.
That's what I like about Anjali. It has to be a celebration.
Endless topics that we can talk about.
Dying to meet you.
Welcome to my podcast.